Combat was not easy, but it was easier than this. General Mike Rogers stood with a scotch in his hand, wishing it were a double, and that he were free to slug it down. If he were in a dark saloon with Colonel August or one of his buddies from the Department of Defense, he would. Then he would nurse the sweet buzz with a beer chaser. But he was not with his colleagues. He was at a black tie party in a three-story townhouse on N Street, in the exclusive Georgetown section of Washington, D.C. The first-floor ballroom was crowded with nearly 200 politicians and socialites, attorneys and foreign dignitaries, business leaders and television news executives. They were all gathered in small groups. Though actively engaged with the people nearest them, each individual was also listening to what was being said in the groups around them. Rogers could see it in the way their eyes moved. They always shifted slightly in the direction they were listening. Some of these silver-haired blue bloods possessed recon skills that would be the envy of CIA field ops. On the battlefield, a man knew who the enemy was. At a party like this, alliances could be made and remade during the course of an evening. That was true throughout Washington, but the density of power brokers from so many arenas made it easier here. In combat, a soldier knew when the fight was over. In Washington, the conflict never ended. Even at Op Center, where Rogers was deputy director, friendships were routinely tested by strong differences of opinion over high-stakes operations. Trust was frayed by competition for assignments, and loyalties were challenged and often destroyed by downsizing and bureaucratic squabbles. The conditions at Op Center were the reason Rogers had come to this party. Since the disbanding of Stryker, Op Center's rapid deployment force that had been commanded by Rogers, the general had been organizing an in-house human intelligence unit. He was not enjoying the work as much as he had hoped. Rogers was a man of grapeshot and action, not observation and note-taking. The work was essential, it just was not for him. To make things worse, his efforts cut into the jurisdiction of Bob Herbert, Op Center's chief of intelligence operations. The strain on their relationship was subtle, but the impact was not. There was no antagonism. To the contrary, they were extremely cautious around one another, like outfielders going for a high-fly ball and stopping short, letting it drop between them. When an aide to Texas Senator Don Orr had called to say the senator was interested in exploring professional opportunities, Rogers agreed to come. So far, the three-term 58-year-old senator had not said much more than a big, "Hello, General. Thanks for coming," before being swallowed by the party. The white-haired rancher-turned-politician said that to virtually everyone as he moved from group to group, shaking hands and kissing cheeks. All of them, Rogers suspected. Rogers did not follow him, as several others were doing. Subtly, of course. They wanted to be noticed and introduced to people. They wanted to be legitimized, like made men at a meeting of the Dons. Rogers did not know any of these people, and so he stood near the wet bar, chatting with one of the two bartenders. As a grandfather clock told the half hour, a woman approached from the side. "There is only one thing worse than being a Washington outsider," she said as she asked the bartender for a Coke. "What's that?" Rogers asked, glancing at her.
"Being a Washington insider," she replied.
Rogers smiled. There was a hint of Vietnamese in her strong, cultured voice, but the rest of her was pure Beltway insider.